This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a variety of things around the Umpqua Valley, and fortunate to be able to get Congressman Cliff Bentz on with us today, live from Washington, D.C., and of course, a lot of interest in any inauguration. Congressman, thanks for being on today.
Kyle, great to be with you again.
So, what was your perspective on Inauguration Day and what took place in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I was one of the 1,900 people, I think, that were crammed into the floor of the rotunda yesterday. It was amazing that the folks who were in charge of this whole thing were able to move the proceedings from outside to inside on basically 2 days' notice. But they got it done. It was kind of a mixed group. I went in, of course, with all the House members. We were organized by our class, and so I went in as a member of the 117th, and so there were the 118th and 119th were behind us, but a whole bunch of Congresses were in front of us, and so I ended up on one of the back seats over against the wall under a television camera, so I didn't have to worry about being seen by anybody, but the entire event was incredibly positive. It was astounding. The people, I think the singers that were there, Carrie Underwood and the gentleman who is a opera singer and with an incredible voice. And I'll look here at the program to get his name. Let's see here. I'll find it here somewhere. And let's see. The national anthem, Christopher D. Macchio, unbelievable voice. And so anyway, that was well received. The president's speech, I will tell you, was one of the first times I've seen him actually stay on script. He read his speech from teleprompters. I haven't seen him stick with a written speech ever until this time. So that was quite interesting. It was extremely well received. We stood up and applauded. I don't know how many times there were. It was a mixture of House members, Republican, Democrats. Everybody sitting behind me apparently was Democrat because they didn't stand up at all. But we were very enthusiastic with what he had to say. So all in all, it was a great event.
Now, this is sort of a geeky sidebar question. What did happen with Carrie Underwood's musical accompaniment?
Well, I'd like to be able to tell you, but I don't know because I was so far back I could just barely see the top of her head. Over the six or seven rows of people in front of me. We were all, of course, on floor level, and she didn't, if she got up on a stage, I couldn't tell. But the short answer is I don't know. She sang a cappella, and she did a great job of it. We were hoping she would sing two verses, but she only sang one, which was too bad because she did a really, really good job.
All right. Well, was an interesting situation there, whatever actually took place. So, and how, since you've been there a while, how is this week in Washington, D.C., regardless of who's taking over, different than any other week the rest of the year?
Well, it's a great question. I will tell you that there's literally hundreds of people still here moving about, and we gave a tour over to the rotunda, and if you can get your member of Congress to go with you, you can go out on the stage the president was on, and we did that earlier. And that, of course, doesn't happen any other week. They left the stage up so that you could go out on it and look about across the room. It's quite a different perspective. You don't have the president and all of his family up in the rotunda very often. I think it might be the second time in history that it's happened, and it was really, really, really something. In all the other weeks, the rotunda is many times empty. I know I go in and across it quite often, and it's extremely sobering to be in that space where so many people have been over the years, and so many have given so much to have, so that we can have it peaceful and and productive. But it's very different to have so many people here from all over the United States.
So with a new president, how do you believe this change could impact not just the nation, but in particular residents of the 2nd Congressional District?
Well, a great question, and I'm so happy, and I mean it, that we have a Republican in the form of Donald Trump as president. And I'll just tell you that he's doing his very, very, very best to make an immediate impression. I think he's realized since he was president, starting out his presidency 8 years ago, he's realized how short a period of time 4 years is, and he wants to move rapidly to try to accomplish the things he promised he would try to do. And so his actions on immigration are going to have an impact. People all across the nation, I think 70-80% want us to secure the border. And he's said many times, every state's a border state. He's right. And the cartels moving in and the fentanyl moving, you know, all over the place, and all of the bad things that come with an unsecured border, he's going to do his best to change. It'll be the first step, in my opinion, in securing the border to what we used to call comprehensive immigration reform. I think the better word for it now would be incremental. But the first step is securing the border. So that's going to have an impact, and I think a positive one as we move through that process. He's going to, of course, do his best to bring accountability to the federal workforce, because I think many of us have observed that no one ever seems to get fired in those spaces. And so what's going on with that? Does everybody perform at a high level all the time in those spaces? I doubt it. And so what he's trying to do is bring some sort of higher level of accountability to the federal workforce. One of the things he's doing is ending remote work policies and saying, get back to work, get back to your office. I know you could go into different offices, federal offices across my district, and find them empty. And still, even today, you can do that. So that's going to change. On tariffs and trade, it's going to be an interesting experience there. He's doing his very, very best to bring jobs back. He thinks that targeted tariffs would be a good thing. We'll see how that works as he moves from threatening them to implementing them, because I think he's going to. On energy and environment, I think he's going to do his best to protect the four lower Snake River dams and thus prevent a great big huge increase in people's utility rates. So that's really good news. And then I could go on and on, but I think you got a real glimpse. We all got a real glimpse of what he's trying to do with the executive orders he just issued. I think he issued 50 yesterday, and he's issuing more now. Some of them won't be supported by the Supreme Court, but I think most will. And I think getting back into the woods is a real possibility now, finally, after all these years with President Trump in office. And that's a really good thing.
Now, as you look over the impact of a new president and your party being in charge of both chambers as well, with that level of influence, what do you think the impact could be for this district?
Well, I think one of the things that many people have understood is that we're spending way more than we bring in the door. We bring about $4.8 trillion a year in the door in the form of revenue, and we have about $6.8 trillion going out the door. So we're spending $2 trillion a year more than we're bringing in. And we've borrowed now $36 trillion, and the interest bill each year is over $1 trillion. And so we've got to do something to slow down spending. We must. Everybody knows it. Nobody wants to admit it. But we are going to address those issues. And so why is this important? Well, if we don't drive down our spending, interest rates will continue to go up. They've already started to creep back up. And I think in part it's because lenders don't believe that we're actually going to quit trying to borrow. And people get nervous when you have, borrowed $36 trillion and show no indication of paying any of it back in other than just rolling it over. And that's what we've been doing for a very long time. And I think people all over the nation, as they pay their credit card bills or look at interest rates on mortgages, are wondering why we haven't done something about it. So we will. And there's other things that I think will help. But I think that getting inflation under control will also require that kind of thinking.
Do you see any of the president's policies, or at least policies as they're being laid out right now, having some controversial areas within the GOP?
Yes, extending the Trump tax cuts, many of which expire at the end of this year, will be extremely expensive. Some have measured it at about $4.5 trillion to extend those tax cuts over 10 years. And so there's going to be much discussion in our Republican, and already has been, conference over how to properly address extending those tax cuts. And we will extend a bunch of them. Why? Because if we don't, many people will see a 40% increase in their taxes. We can't have that. We cannot have that. And that's people making under $400,000 a year would be the ones having to figure out how to pay these increased taxes. And so we will be working on that. But there's going to be a lot of folks or a substantial number who are going to want aggressive reduction in the deficit, and that may have a negative impact upon how these tax laws are extended. And there's other things that we would disagree on, but the great big one is how in the world to slow down our spending.
And what about the potential impact of this DOGE group?
So the efficiency group that President Trump has asked Elon Musk to assist him with, I understand that Vivek Ramaswamy is going to run for governor, so he's now out of the picture. But the president sees in Musk a master of efficiency, if you will, someone who can come in and look at some of our systems and make recommendations on how to reduce bureaucracy, how to streamline processes. And if you want somebody that's got quite the impressive resume, take a look at Elon Musk's resume. So everybody's help is welcome. He's not elected, so I think his job will be to recommend. And then we in Congress are going to be doing our job, which is to look at what he recommends and see if it will work. But there is plenty of waste and that kind of thing in our government, and I look forward to seeing what he recommends.
Now, for you, going into this new session of Congress, any change to the committees or any of your roles in the House?
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, I moved off of Judiciary and over onto Energy and Commerce. I had to get a waiver so that I could stay on Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries, which is important because that's where federal land is governed in significant part. That is the part that's Bureau of Land Management, and ONC land, is within the jurisdiction of that committee, so I stayed on it. But on Energy and Commerce, that committee has jurisdiction over all things healthcare, all things energy, all things commerce, all things data, all things artificial intelligence. All of these things are in that committee, and I'm very, very happy to be able to participate in those kind of discussions.
And do you see, you mentioned artificial intelligence, do you see the role of that impacting life or government, or where do you see that headed?
So it's already having quite the impact on everything. Medical care is a great example. I had Google here in my office this morning, and the general counsel for Google was here, and we were going through some of the new cutting-edge developments in artificial intelligence. But the speed at which these new systems can solve problems is amazing. So we were talking about how in the medical field you can now take a problem that would have taken years and years and years to figure out, and you can resolve it in just minutes. And so things having to do with the most complex research on the human genome, for example, are being sped up dramatically. And this is why you're going to see President Trump in the next couple of days, maybe as early as tomorrow, come out with an announcement, I think, as to $500 billion being invested, I think, privately in AI. And why? Because we have to win this race. It's a really long race, but we've got to win it because whoever controls that that new space is going to have a lot to say about the future of this world. And our biggest challenge right now is China, and we need to do everything we can to prevail in managing this new type of technology.
With the new administration, how will this make an impact, or will it, on things like the Israeli war right now and the things that are going on?
Well, I think the administration recognizes more than most the damage that these wars do to the international economy and to human life and all of that. I also think that President Trump understands that it's absolutely essential to have a powerful military in order to protect America's interests and the world's for that matter. I know he does not want to get us into any wars. He wants to do his best to help end the Ukraine-Russia war, to do his best to end the Israel-Hamas conflict. But, you know, the world has an interesting way of doing its own thing, and so we've got to be ready for the worst. And so I'm happy to see that he's totally supportive of our military and trying to keep it strong.
Now, when he has talked about doing things like buying Greenland and even some talk about trying to annex Canada, do you see those two things going anywhere?
Well, I think that's unlikely. I don't think the Canadians or the folks in Greenland are going to be happy about it, but I understand his thinking. And his thinking is, if we're going to protect ourselves in this future world of folks not necessarily being our friends, having strong relationships with Canada and with Greenland essential if we're going to control what's going to happen on the north end of this globe of ours. I would also, you didn't mention Panama, but I think it's worth mentioning that the Panamanian situation is one where we made a deal when we deeded that land back to Panama after we built the canal. And remember, France failed to get it built. We went down, we got it built. And when it was turned back over, there was a treaty entered into, and it's extremely important that Panama follow that treaty. Right now, my understanding is, and I'm still researching it, that China has established a beachhead on both ends of the canal, beachhead in the form of businesses and huge corporations that have a lot to do with goods flowing through the canal. And whether that's violative or not, or the neutrality portion of that treaty is a question. And I think that's what President Trump is alluding to as we look at the canal.
Now, let's shift closer into your world. Any specific legislation you're working on for this session?
Well, I should report that I just met with Derek DeGroote, a commissioner out of Klamath County, and Tim Freeman, commissioner out of Douglas County, and we were going over the ONC land challenges to try to get back into the woods, and we had a great and productive conversation, and I'll be working on both conversations with the White House on how to use perhaps the executive power to address getting us back into the woods, and we'll be working with Bruce Westerman and others on trying to manage through the never-ending spotted owl, barred owl situation. We're hopeful that we'll have legislation that will pass maybe as early as tomorrow across the floor of the House on the Fix Our Forest Act, and that would have some good things to do with logging and removing fuel from the forest to reduce the chance of cataclysmic fire. I'm happy to report I got a law passed, one of my most important bills passed, protecting the farmers and ranchers and the Klamath from being wrongfully charged for changes that need to be made to the two remaining dams on the Klamath. That should be the responsibility of somebody other than the farmers and ranchers and water users in the Klamath. Got that bill passed, signed by the past president, just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm very happy for that. And I could go on, but I'll stop there.
Well, let's ask about one of the questions that I get asked most often about the status of the veterans home on the VA campus in Roseburg. I know there was a big push to get something done by the end of the calendar year, but where did things end up?
Right. So once the Oregon legislature had put the $30 million into or committed to that home. That moved the home up to the first level to be considered by the VA. That's why it has like a number one rating. It doesn't mean it's the number one. It means it's in the category at the top of the heap. But there's a bunch of those in that top of the heap category projects. Each of those projects, though, is dependent upon Congress finding the money for the project and then handing the money to the Veterans Administration, and then the Veterans Administration determines to whom the money is going to go. Having your state be a already committed participant is huge. Oregon's done that, hooray, and we're hopeful that we'll see money make its way to the VA for that purpose. It is clear, given what we're focused on here right now, which is trying not to spend as much money, that any of these kinds of programs, finding the money for them is going to be challenging. But the good news is the state of Oregon has stepped up, and that gives us a basis to move forward on. There was some sort of misinformation recently there that it was a number four category project. That's not true. It's in the number one category. And now, though, that doesn't mean the money's there. It just means that project has made its way to the top of the heap.
And what does it take to move it to the next step?
Money. And that means as we work here in Congress to figure out where the funding is going to come from for veterans, that issue will be on the table. And exactly where it will end up is dependent upon who's on that committee. I'm not. I'm not a veteran. Many of the people on the committee are. But we will be there saying, hey, this state of Oregon has stepped up. Where do we fit? And how much will it take to get this thing moving forward? But that's a process that right now is going to be complicated by the great big beautiful bill that President Trump wants passed, the tax act, the debt ceiling, the continuing resolution, the appropriations kind of goes on forever. But we will be making that point.
All right, Congressman Cliff Bentz, we're out of time for now, and hope to connect with you again. Thanks for being on today, the day after inauguration.
I appreciate the opportunity, Kyle. Thank you.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.